and welcome to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio on a Farmer Friday. I'm Darren Hefty.
And I'm Brian Hefty. Thanks for joining us today. It is Farmer Friday. We would love to talk to you during our show. If you want to call in, the number here is 844-44-AG-PHD. That's 844-442-4743. You can email us, radio@agphd.com, or send us a note on Twitter, AgPhD Media, Darren Hefty, or Brian Hefty. Well, it is planting season in most of North America, and this is the time of the year where we get the most questions, so we're going to get to the Ag PhD mailbag here in just a second. Before we do, I guess I just wanted to say it's May 1st, and I am so unbelievably happy that at least in our region, we've had a warm and dry spring, and planting is ahead of normal. Heat units are ahead of normal. Hopefully that continues for us. I was talking to some guys last night, and I just said, man, 2012, 2013, 2014, we had three dry springs in a row. We've had five wet springs in a row. Five! I'm so thankful that this is breaking the cycle a little bit, and we're just about done planting here, so that is, it's just fun. So hopefully things are going well for you on your farm. If not, hang in there. You know, a lot of times we do have the opportunity to get that crop in. Don't be thinking that every year is going to be like 2019. 2019 was certainly an exception. All right, well, let's get to the Ag PhD mailbag.
All right, first, get a little teasing from Joey. He said, you guys are PhDs that can't pronounce the word root instead of saying root. Yeah, there's a lot of different pronunciations around. It's kind of fun as we get talking about some of these weeds, too, where growers will call them something and we'll get these names and be like, what? We can't even understand what you're saying. But yeah, you're right. We say it a little different. That's just the way it is. But thanks for noticing, Joey. Thanks for watching the show. We really appreciate that.
Yep. And in this part of the United States, people say root and always have. So I don't know. Maybe it'll change someday, but that's just how people say it.
All right. Got a question here. Ask you, what do we think the best variety of soybeans is for high yields? And I would say this. There really isn't one. There are a lot of different varieties out there that can get really high yields. And
sure.
I just got in this discussion this morning with an agronomist, and we were talking about what maturity would ensure him the highest yield potential. Well, that's really tough to know because he was going to plant a bean that was a little earlier maturing than what I would be planting. But who knows what the year is going to bring?
Exactly.
And he said, does this still have 80 bushel yield potential? Absolutely. There's no question about it. We can still get tremendous yields. Just figure out what your yield limiting factor is. Now, in some cases, it may be a defensive trait that you really
right.
need.
Like,
right. for example, say brown stem rot is just terrible in your area. Plant a brown stem rot resistant bean and don't worry about it. Or if you've got sudden death syndrome in your area and it's just terrible and you're doing everything else you can, you're improving drainage, you're using the seed treatment and so forth, you got to pick a variety that has good tolerance to that. So defensive traits withstanding, no. There's a ton of different soybeans that all have tremendous yielding ability.
I'd say this too. We talk all the time about spread your risk. Plant different maturities. Plant lots of different varieties. We do that for corn, for soybeans, for any crop that we're raising. We are real big believers in that because you just don't know what's going to happen. And I'll say this too. Plant new stuff, especially with corn and soybeans. There are so many new varieties that come out each and every year. For a lot of seed companies now, we're seeing half of the soybeans are brand new every year. Half. And with corn, it's a third. That's huge. Well, if it's brand new, or in year one or year two, or you know, however you want to look at that, it's been out for 1 year, it's been out for 2 years. How much experience do you have? You don't remember what, just a little bit ago I was talking about we had three dry springs in a row, 2012, 2013, 2014. Okay, well, if you went into 2015 and all you had was, oh, I have 3 years of data. Well, so what? You had three drought springs and now you have a super wet spring. Everything was different. And all of a sudden guys are going, what? Why? My winners from the last 3 years lost this year. I go, of course they did because we had different weather. We don't know what's going to happen. So I just know on our farm, I don't want to put all my eggs into one basket because we can't predict Mother Nature.
All right. Thanks for the comment there and question. Got this one from Nate over in Illinois. He said, I'm wondering if what you guys use for a nutrient uptake chart for corn and soybeans, have you found a good one based off growth stages? Curious if you could share that information with me. And then, of course, he says, hope all is well with you and your families and everyone is staying healthy. And same to you, Nate. We really, really hope everyone's doing well out there, especially in this busy time where farmers really can't afford to have a whole lot of sick days right now. All right, so nutrient uptake charts. I a lot of times look at University of Illinois charts, Brian. Are there different ones that you use or...
University of Illinois charts?
Yeah, they've got some good. They have some good charts. I know Iowa State's got some charts.
So what? So what does Illinois say? Do they say by growth stage? How many nutrients you've used? Is it a chart or is it a graph?
It's a graph.
Oh, okay, so we're probably talking the same thing. I assume that's the one that came from Iowa State originally, but I don't know. You could be right. Maybe it is from Illinois originally. But anyway, yeah, this goes back 30 years ago. If you go back to the old corn and soybean growth and development books, it'll show you right in there just a nice graph in terms of nitrogen or, you know, some of the different nutrients and when they are needed in the crop, and then what percent goes to the grain and to the different parts of stover. So, yeah, I mean, that's what I would do. I'd look up corn and soybean growth and development, and then Iowa State University is what I would do, and it'll most likely pull up one of those old books, and you just simply look at the graphs there that will show you. I know I'm going to have something actually, Darren. I just wrote an article for a magazine coming up that'll be out 1st of June anyway. And that is exactly what you're talking about there, but it's corn and nitrogen. And that one is Iowa State. And if I remember right, so I'll just throw this out off the top of my head, at V9, the corn still needs to bring in 80% of its nitrogen. 80%. So that means you got to have a lot of nitrogen sitting in the soil and nitrogen that's going to come available through organic matter mineralization.
Getting a lot of questions in for the Ag PhD mailbag. And yes, as Brian had mentioned before, it's a very busy time right now. If you have agronomic questions, give us a call. Our phone lines are open at 844-44-AG-PHD or send us an email, radio@agphd.com. We'll be right back.
Challenging field conditions often make harvest difficult. Can your corn head handle it? The GTS X10 corn head from AgriUS is a rugged, cost-effective alternative to heavier, more traditional heads. Constructed of durable yet lightweight aluminum, the X10 puts less strain on your combine without losing harvest effectiveness. And it is 40% lighter than traditional heads, reducing field compaction in those less than ideal conditions. For more information, give us a call at 833-4-AGRA-US.
Imagine the perfect flow of grain from the field to the bin. Imagine a single rotor that ensures both quality and productivity. An advanced system that optimizes harvest settings on the go. You don't have to imagine. With features like AFS Harvest Command, an axial flow combine from Case IH always delivers the perfect flow for your operation. Find out how. Talk to your Case IH dealer today.
We started utilizing the Dual React system this year. You can adjust your speed and it automatically adjusts your sprayer tips. So you can slow down and you aren't building up huge droplets, or you can speed up and you're not throwing a mist that's drifting.
Hypro, helping you spray better.
How much yield did you lose the moment you planted your seed? Introducing the Germinator Closing Wheel from Farm Shop MFG. Designed and built by a farmer tired of seeing yield loss from poor stands, the Germinator gives your crop the strong start it needs for maximum yield. Visit farmshopmfg.com.
You're all set with the 4x4 turbo diesel truck. How about some options? Spray and bed liner?
Absolutely.
Tailgate step and Nerf bars?
Gotta have them.
Tie down hooks and stainless steel toolbox?
You know it.
Tinted windows?
Of course.
Options are good. That's as true in the field as it is with your pickup. In addition to taking care of tough weeds, new Open Sky herbicide gives you more rotational choices than ever before and an easy-to-handle formulation.
Gooseneck tow package?
Yep.
Discover more Open Sky details at openskyherbicide.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio on a Farmer Friday, taking your calls and questions all throughout the show. Our phone lines are open at 844-44-AG-PHD. If you give us a call, we will get you on today. Let's start out in North Carolina. We've got Jimmy with us right now. Jimmy, how are you doing?
Yeah, I'm doing good today. How about y'all?
You know, we're doing pretty well. And I know in the central part of this country how the coronavirus and everything that's going on with the economy has impacted us. How about on the coast? How about in North Carolina?
We've been impacted pretty good. We've had some issues. You know, we started out in January kind of excited about getting the year going, and commodity prices were kind of going our way, and we thought things were going to be good. We had pretty strong bases on corn and beans, and then, you know, when the corona hit, it kind of changed everybody's plan. Our bases on corn and beans both have dropped off, and we're independent hog producers, so we've been real concerned about access, ability to processing capacity in the meat slaughtering industry, and that's kind of affected us so far. And of course, we raise specialty crops. We raise tobacco, and we use H-2A guest workers, and we've had some issues getting the guys across to into the U.S. to do the field work this spring. So it went from starting out pretty exciting to getting a little bit discouraging.
So what do you do in that case? Do you put in some different crops, or was the tobacco already going in and already it was already too far down the road?
It was kind of already too far down the road. We had seeded. We started them out in greenhouses in February, and then we, in the middle to late April, we transplant them, small transplants we put into the field, and that's when we, you know, started needing additional labor. But so far, we've been very fortunate. We've had guys that's been on a farm for 10 to 15 years, so they've had really good track records and hadn't had any problems, so they did not have to have a go through the consulate's office where they got a waiver on their personal interviews because of the issues going on. So they were able to get on across, and we've had had to change procedures a little bit and the border crossing, but once they got that implemented, things have smoothed out, and we have got the guys in that we count on, and we've started transplanting. So things are looking a little better. They are improving. We work with Smithfield on our hogs, and so far they've been able to work us in, you know, with our hogs each week. So, you know, things are looking a lot more encouraging as we all learn how to deal with this new normal.
Yeah, that's for sure. All right, how about the crops? What are crops looking like out there?
We actually got started early this year. Our spring come about 2 weeks early, and we just got our corn planted. We actually started planting the 1st of April, and normally we start about April the 12th. We got just about all our corn in, and our very first corn got a couple of frosts on them after it come up, but it doesn't seem to have hurt it. It stunned it a little bit, but I think as soon as we get some warm weather, I think the corn will come on and take off. And of course, we just started planting soybeans last week, so we really hadn't had time to germinate. And the tobacco crop is, which just started planting Monday. So we kind of, everything's kind of just getting started good, but we've had good soil conditions so far. So it's kind of been a good spring to work in. We haven't been so excessively wet. We do a lot of no-till planting, so, you know, having that soil not too wet is a real key component to getting started on a good crop.
You bet. You bet. Yeah, a lot going on, talking with Jimmy down in North Carolina. Jimmy, thank you so much. Really appreciate the update, and certainly keeping all the livestock producers like yourself on our hearts right now through this tough time. So hopefully things start turning back to normal real soon for you.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And just stay a shout out to all the ag community, and just keep your heads up, and things are going to be better.
You bet. Thanks a lot, Jimmy. Really appreciate it here. Good luck and stay safe this spring. Let's head back to South Dakota. Got Chad with us right now talking a little sulfur. Chad, how you doing?
Doing pretty good. Enjoying the weather.
Yes, that's for sure. That's for sure. All right. So tell me about this sulfur. What are you up to there?
Well, agronomists have been recommending putting in AMS with our dry fertilizer program, which has the sulfur in it. Just kind of wanted you to explain the benefits of that for the soil and the plants.
Sure. So Sulfur is just tremendously important in crops. It is it's needed for so many different things, everything from helping that plant make protein, amino acids, enzymes, vitamins. If you have adequate sulfur, you typically have better nitrogen utilization. But, you know, really at the end of the day, we can get scientific with what sulfur does. But as a farmer, all I really care about is if I'm going to spend some money on it, is it going to help my yield? And so usually where we see more help with yield is where we've got continuous corn. And the reason why is because there's a bigger need. Corn needs a tremendous amount. I mean, if you've got spots in fields like we do where we're hitting 300, we need 45 pounds. Even if you say, okay, well, I got spots that are hitting 250 out in my field. Well, 250 bushel corn needs 38 pounds of sulfur. That is a lot of sulfur. So even on our farm, we put a bunch of ammonium sulfate on this spring, and that's really the reason why we've been lacking on sulfur. You look at your soil tests, and I don't know how yours look, but I just know that ours have been substandard here the last couple, 3 years, so we're trying to bump those up. But anyway, I was saying corn on corn, light soil, and sometimes when you have low organic matter too, that's where we see sulfur paying a little more. And then otherwise, the other thing would be where you're getting much higher yields. So what I say to a lot of guys is, yep, I realize Dad or Grandpa might not have put sulfur on, but let's face it, Dad and Grandpa didn't have as good of yields, and Dad and Grandpa might have had manure too. We don't have nearly as many people raising livestock in South Dakota as there used to be. I mean, if you look at how many people were raising livestock even 30 years ago, and especially 50 years ago, it was way more than what we have today, and everybody was spreading a little bit of manure. Well, there was sulfur in that. We were also getting acid rain back then too, because we had much more polluted air. We have cleaner air today, so we don't get the free sulfur. So we are seeing a lot more guys putting at least a little bit of sulfur out. I'm not saying a guy has to get carried away, but you know, if you throw a little bit out, that's probably a decent investment, especially for corn. So how much are you putting out there for ammonium sulfate?
50 pounds this year.
Yeah. Okay. So you're only talking about 12 pounds of sulfur. So no, you know, tremendously huge deal or expense. And I would have to assume that's, you have a good chance of having that pay.
Yeah. And for me, I would be saying, all right, let's do the 50. And then, you know what, a couple areas, let's do 100 and let's see if it makes any difference and keep track of that through your farm. I'm putting out considerably more than that on some ground. I was just putting together some fertility plans here for the last of our corn going in. And yeah, we're using a little bit more, but you can see for your area and what you're starting with also. I've also got some ground that's got quite a bit of sulfur in it. So,
but here's the whole thing, Chad, and I think why more guys are talking about sulfur these last couple years, because we've had record rainfall. Sulfate is leachable. It leaches at about half the rate as nitrate. So it doesn't leach quite as fast, but we have seen lower sulfur levels throughout the Midwest the last couple of years because we've had more rain. So I think that, too, kind of adds to this whole thing.
Yeah. Good point you brought up there. I sure appreciate it. That kind of explains the need and what agronomists are saying, recommending bumping that up.
Yep. So, yeah, and I realize it might be a little different for you, and the agronomist maybe hasn't said much about the sulfur in the past, but I think those are some of the reasons why, at least this year, more guys are talking about sulfur. And we'll see as we go down the road. But like I say, you know, as yields go up, which hopefully they're going to over time, we're probably going to need more sulfur. All right. Well, hey.
Good to know.
Well, hey, Chad. Thanks a lot for the call. Really appreciate it. And have a great spring.
Thank you.
You bet.
All right. Got a question in from Rick. He said, "Do you have a handy reference showing the levels of each nutrient, including micros, for high yield corn and beans? What levels or amounts are the high yield guys striving for?" You know what, Rick? It certainly depends on what your yield goal is. You can download the free Ag PhD fertilizer removal app. Type in your crop. Like corn in this example, and then type in what your yield goal is. It'll tell you exactly how many pounds of each of those nutrients you need on your farm. Thanks for the question. Really appreciate that. We'll be right back with more of your calls and questions after this.
Hey, Bill, any advice to control tough weeds and rootworms?
That's easy, Jim. Buy two, save three.
Wait, for weeds and rootworms?
Buy two, save three. Combine your Impact or new Impact Z herbicide purchase with a qualifying insecticide and save $3 per acre.
Buy two, save three. That is good advice.
For details, go to buy2save3.com. Impact, Impact Z, and Buy 2 Save 3 are trademarks owned by Amvac Chemical Corporation. All rights reserved. Impact Z is a restricted-use pesticide. Always read and follow label instructions.
Your land is a legacy, a challenge from those who tended it before you, to build on their foundations. At Corteva Agriscience, we understand what it means to be the stewards of a legacy. We embrace the challenge of building on the foundation of Dow AgroSciences to maintain your trust, to bring new solutions, to help you care for your land. See how we can help build your legacy at rangeandpasture.com.
Before it's too late and white mold becomes a problem, you need to ask your seed dealer for Heads Up Seed Treatment. When raising soybeans in the Midwest, you know the risk of being caught unprepared. As heard on AgPHD, there are several steps you can take prior to planting for a successful management plan against white mold. Compatible and cost-effective season-long protection starts now by asking your seed dealer to apply Heads Up to your 2020 bean seed order. For more information, visit headsupst.com.
Success isn't just about maintaining your operation, how you make out for the season, or how much you can get from each acre. It's about doing precisely what needs to be done to feed your crop and grow your legacy, all the way down to the last drop. AgroLiquid Precision Crop Nutrition. Apply less, expect more. Find a retailer at agroliquid.com.
What do you think of when you hear Palmer Amaranth or water hemp? If you use Fierce herbicide in your soybean fields, you don't have to think about them at all. With two effective modes of action and up to 8 weeks of residual control, Fierce takes on even the toughest weeds like water hemp and Palmer Amaranth. Take control of your soybean fields and get incentives from Bayer Plus Rewards when you choose the power of Fierce herbicide. Talk to your local retailer today to put Fierce to work in your fields. Always read and follow label directions.
You deserve to have a building that will last for generations. With more than 110 years of experience and thousands of satisfied customers, Morton Buildings is the industry leader you can trust. Unlike other construction companies, you work with Morton Buildings craftsmen from conception to completion. There's no better time to buy. Lock in your new building for 2020 today. Contact your local Morton sales office or visit mortonbuildings.com.
Farmer Friday and Ag PhD Radio. Thanks for joining us today. We're broadcasting live from the Morton studio, taking your calls and questions at 844-44-AG-PHD, or you can send us an email, radio@agphd.com. Got Mark online right now with us over in Illinois. Mark, how you doing?
I'm doing great today, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
You bet. I understand you're interested in boron, and that's a fun topic for us. We're doing a lot of different things with boron on our farm, too. What you got cooking?
So what I'm thinking is our insect pressure has been reduced the last couple of years, so I'm not planning on putting any insecticide on with the planter. I was wondering, can I use my insecticide system? I know we don't want to get it in the furrow, but can we use a dry insecticide box and do some testing with boron that way?
Yes. Last year we did some of that at our Ag PhD field guy. We had a couple of the high yield guys that had plots here, and we put on about, let's see, it would have been about 13 pounds of a 15% boron material. So that gave them 2 actual pounds of boron banded over the row in roughly, let's call it a 7-inch band. Now, if you're going to go that high, that's pretty high. And, I mean, you could see it in their levels all season long. It worked out good because we have really good calcium levels and fairly heavy soil. So those are the couple of things that help safe in boron. Okay, so if you have light soil and low calcium, then that kind of level would literally be toxic to that corn plant. So you got to be a little careful with the rate, but yes, you can absolutely do that. And you had the exact right point. Don't put it in the furrow. If you were going to do it, you'd band it over the top. Boron is leachable, not as fast as nitrate or even sulfate, but it is leachable. It will move down into the soil profile with rain. So yeah, that's the direction I would go if I was going to try some.
Okay, because the diffuser, you know, comes out in between the opener and the press wheels, so I would assume I'm going to get enough dirt back ahead before, or should I try to come up with some way to get it dropped behind the press wheel?
You know, Mark, this kind of takes me back about 30 years when I was a young agronomist, and we used to work on this with planters and insecticide, and usually we were trying to move guys to what you're talking about, and so we in effect get a T-band. What we prefer with this boron deal is not that application method. We'd want it actually behind the closing wheels. If it was me, that's what I would try to set it up for.
Okay, very good. I don't think that would be too big a deal to do that, to try some of that.
So, all right, sounds good.
Very good.
Well, hey, let us know how it turns out.
Guys.
You bet. Thanks.
You bet. Bye.
Let's head out to Tennessee here. We've got Jim on with us right now. Jim, I understand it's your birthday. Happy birthday.
I feel pretty good for a 50-year-old guy. It's 77 and sunny in Tennessee. We're finally opening our country or our state back up. And hopefully we'll get through this coronavirus and we'll show the rest of the world what our industrial and agricultural might can do.
I hope you're absolutely right. I'm pretty excited about that too, and I'm ready to get back to whatever our new normal is. That's for sure. How about the crops? What are the crops looking like down in your country?
I'm sitting here looking at my first emerged corn that was planted on the 19th, and it's got good emergence, good population. We've had fairly decent weather. It's dry and sunny today. We have been a little on the cool side, so everything's slow to come out of the ground, but so far in the last week, it has really progressed. So things look pretty good. There's quite a bit of soybeans. I have not planted any yet, but there's some full-season beans that are in the ground, and they're coming out, and I hear from my agronomists that they look good.
Tell me about soybeans for you. What maturity will you plant on your farm, and how come other people are planting first and you're not in yet?
Well, mine are all going to be double crops, so I got to get my wheat crop and my barley crop out of the way, but I'll plant anything from a 3.9 to a 4.9.
Okay.
I usually try to plant between 4 and 5 varieties.
All right, so with that wheat crop, when is harvest, and how does this year's crop look?
We were just far enough south, and we got a little bit of rain last fall that delayed us planting. And so because of that, I don't have any frost damage, but there's some guys in the neighborhood that got in the field a little earlier and had some frost damage. And I've heard it could be as much as 20%, but all mine looks pretty good.
Yep. Yeah, the frost thing has been interesting. And you're right, we've had some cool spells that have been a little bit interesting this year. But hey, you know what? We got a lot of season left, and we got time to make up for some of those things. Talk to us about weed control. When you're doing the double crop beans, does that help you? Does it make it more of a challenge in that bean crop, or the full season beans tougher to keep the weeds under control?
Well, we've been in 15-inch beans forever, and that seems to help suppress the weeds, and we have been in pretty good shape. I don't have a lot of stuff I'm having problems killing, but we're spending quite a bit of money putting more pre-emergence than we have in the past. You know, before we were just Roundup and that's it, but now we're putting quite a bit of other things on. I got an agronomy company that works and does an awful good job, and I've had as clean of fields in the last 4 or 5 years that I've ever had. So I'm happy with what we're doing. Yes, it's costing me some more money, but we're getting good results and getting good yields.
Awesome. All right. Well, then the most important question here, what are your birthday plans? You got anything big going on?
We're going to our favorite pizza joint tonight. The wife and kids have been sequestered for nearly 6 weeks. And I think they're more excited about going out in the public than I am for having a birthday.
Absolutely. Awesome. Well, Jim, happy birthday. Have fun with your family, and good luck here going into the spring.
Well, thank you, and I enjoy the show. Y'all have a good day.
You bet. Thanks a lot. Let's head over to Kentucky. We got Dennis with us right now. Dennis, how are things going over there?
Oh, doing pretty good.
All right, Jim was talking about some of the frost damage on some of these cereal crops. Did you see any of that in your area?
Yeah, about 3 weeks ago we had a freeze, and we actually had some in the community, some wheat already headed out. And I believe it hurt it a little bit, but ours and a lot of it hadn't headed. I don't think it did much damage to that wasn't headed out.
Yep, yep, that's for sure. So when you're looking at crops this year, what's different? Has it been overall a pretty good start to the year?
We're really small and we're right on time. But the guys that have a lot of acres usually start planting about March 15th. I don't think anybody really started planting before April 15th this year. We've been wet up until the last couple of weeks. Right now, I'd say corn is probably 80 to 90% finished. The push right now is everybody getting fungicide on their wheat.
Yeah, that's, well, you can say, like you say here, if you had stuff already starting to head out a few weeks ago and then others are just getting there, that's a good time to get that done, no doubt about it. Janelle said you may have some questions for us. I don't want to talk too much and not get to all your questions. Are you thinking about anything in particular, Dennis?
Yes. I started talking to y'all about 3 years ago, and I grow a lot of alfalfa, and I've started deep tillage in the when I start a crop alfalfa. After talking to y'all a lot, I decided to put down about 3 years worth of potash and phosphate, and then I don't have any way to get it in deep except to put it on the ground and then use a turning plow about 8 or 9 inches deep.
Yep.
And so I did that, and I think I called y'all 3 times to verify that I was doing the right thing. And so I did. And the very next week after I did that, I heard Brian say, well, now, if you're going to do this, you need to get your magnesium in line with your potash. He never mentioned that when we were talking.
Well, it's always one extra thing, Dennis.
Yeah. So what do I need to – I mean, we don't have a big problem with magnesium around here anyway, but is that something I need to keep an eye on after putting all that potash on? I think that's what he said, magnesium and potash need to be in balance.
Yeah, Dennis, we did talk about that, and it was really going the other way around, that a lot of guys lack potassium for the amount of magnesium that they have in their soil because the potassium demands are so great by crops, and we keep sucking it out and don't replace enough. So you might be just fine. I'm not that worried about it for you. If you say you normally have good levels of magnesium, you're probably in good shape. We do really want to get those P and K levels up. That is absolutely the most important thing when we're going into alfalfa. If you got more questions for us, just hang on. We'll be right back.
What do you think of when you hear Palmer amaranth or water hemp? If you use Fierce herbicide in your soybean fields, you don't have to think about them at all. With 2 effective modes of action and up to 8 weeks of residual control, Fierce takes on even the toughest weeds like water hemp and Palmer amaranth. Take control of your soybean fields and get incentives from Bayer Plus Rewards when you choose the power of Fierce herbicide. Talk to your local retailer today to put Fierce to work in your fields. Always read and follow label directions.
High-yield corn growers know that feeding the crop and soil are keys to maximizing yield potential. Nutec's EDA and Reverb are specifically formulated to help manage limiting factors associated with today's farming conditions. Nutec's EDA works within the plant to support nutrient mobility and utilization. Reverb focuses on the soil, providing beneficial trace elements which help condition the root zone for optimal microbial activity. Low use rates and superb tank mix compatibility make Nutec's EDA and Reverb no-brainers in the high-yield grower toolbox.
Want to cut production costs without losing yield? Brian Ryberg from Buffalo Lake, Minnesota has done just that. Here's his story.
We began using a soil warrior on our farm the fall of 2014. We've seen many benefits from better water infiltration, a lot less hours on equipment, fuel, being able to reduce our fertilizer side. So it's really simplified our operation.
See what makes Soil Warrior different and better at SoilWarrior.com.
You need a powerful herbicide to fight the war on weeds.
Vellum is Rotem North America's mesotrione herbicide, and it fights against the annual broadleaf weeds attacking your cornfields. Winning this battle means higher yields, lower cost to you, and maximized profitability. For long-lasting residual weed control, check out Evinco Vilify and our newest mix, Rixa. For application, flexibility, and season-long control, that's Evinco Vilify and Rixa, powered by Vellum. For more information, visit vellumherbicide.com. That's B-E-L-L-U-M herbicide.com.
Revitech fungicide from BASF has been specifically developed for the selective soybean grower who doesn't compromise. If you think good is good enough, if you're okay with just achieving rather than overachieving, if average is your goal, this is not the fungicide for you. Revitech fungicide, brand new chemistry, 3 no-excuse modes of action, 0 modes of compromise. Sounds like the fungicide for you. Revitech fungicide from BASF, that's smart. Always read and follow label directions.
Introducing the Germinator Closing Wheel from Farm Shop MFG.
We interrupt this message for an important announcement. In these uncertain times, many farmers are looking to prolong their grain storage. That's why Farm Shop MFG is offering a $12.50 credit per germinator towards the purchase of a Grain Temp Guard Alarm DT, up to $200 per unit. Protect last year's crop and start 2020 off right. Go to farmshopmfg.com to order today.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio on Farmer Friday. We're broadcasting live from the Morton Studio today, and you can join the show if you've got an agronomic question or just want to talk about what's happening on your farm by calling us at 844-44-AG-PHD. It's just what Dennis did down in Kentucky. We were chatting a little bit about alfalfa production, and he was talking about doing some deep tillage, putting on 3 years worth of P&K. When did you do that, Dennis, and how many years has it been? Have you noticed any difference in the crop yet?
No, I just I planted a crop in the fall of 18 and did that, and I planted another crop this spring and did that. So we're probably just going to start seeing some results here in the next year or two.
Excellent.
But it makes sense to me to get it down there where the roots are.
Yeah, I agree.
And I'd like to make a comment that my son and I attended y'all's winter workshop this year.
You bet.
Really enjoyed it, and we're taking a few fields and trying to get our base saturation, working on that, and we hope to come back again next year to we learned enough to know how to ask an intelligent question maybe next year.
Well, that's good. Yeah, we got to get on the same base communication level, so that's awesome. And yeah, I would love to see you again next year. Did you read Neil Kinsey's book? Did you get a copy of that yet?
Actually, I'm glad you mentioned that. I had forgotten all about that. We talked about that. And I told Wesley we needed to get one of those, so I'm glad you reminded me of that.
You bet.
Hey, Dennis, I just got to ask you, though. You came all the way from Kentucky up to South Dakota for our workshop last year?
Yes.
Yep. So what made you decide to drive
If I remember right, Dennis, I remember you said you were looking to get more time for hunting, but you were having a struggle with that.
Yeah, it's the dead of the week. Actually, what we did when we left y'all's place, we went out to the Badlands hiking. It was an excuse to get out to the Badlands.
Well, that's good. So, yeah, we really appreciated you coming up, and thanks a lot for the kind words today, and hope things turn out great for you here in 2020.
We'll be talking to you later. Thank you.
You bet. Yeah, thanks.
Let's head over to Minnesota here. We got Dion with us right now. Dion, how are you doing today?
Good. How are you guys?
Good. Good. What's on your mind today?
Well, I'm getting ready to weed and feed corn, and I had a question about how much 28% I can put down, if I need to add any water to it and stabilizers so I can have it not all get released at one time.
Okay, so in terms of do you have to put water with it? No, you don't. So we were out doing a lot of spraying in March and early April, back when the ground would be frozen in the morning and then thawing in the afternoon. So we sprayed on a lot of days where it was 15, 20 degrees out. You can't do that if there's water in there. So you want just regular 28%, not 32% if you are worried about freezing conditions. Now, if you want to put some water with your 28% today, you certainly can, but there in most cases is no need unless that's going to help with the mixing of whatever herbicides you're throwing in there. The other thing that I would say is always have a compatibility agent on the spray truck just in case you need it. I just had a deal just this morning, an agronomist was showing me, and he's like, yep, I got a problem. And I said, well, do you have the compatibility agent? Nope, he doesn't have it on the truck. And I'm like, what? Come on. Have some. If he would have had some there, we'd have solved the problem in 10 seconds. So anyway, usually it all works out great, just putting your herbicide together with your liquid nitrogen. We do a whole bunch of that. And in terms of how much you can put on, usually we talk about cation exchange capacity. So this just gets you at least in the ballpark. And we look at the cation exchange capacity. Let's just say that it's 10, for example, and we multiply that times 10. So that would mean we could throw 100 pounds of nitrogen out there and feel fairly comfortable. That's how much our soil can hold at any one time. Now, the closer you are to when the nitrogen's going to be used, then you can maybe push that a little bit without even worrying about a nitrogen stabilizer. If you're doing it at planting time and you go, man, it's going to be a month before my crop uses much of any nitrogen, that's where a stabilizer is more likely to pay. So yeah, if it was me, I would at least consider it, but it depends on how much nitrogen you're throwing out there in total. If you're only throwing a little bit out, no big deal. If you're trying to throw quite a bit out, then absolutely I'm putting a stabilizer with it.
How important is it, as I recall you guys said, that by the time the corn has V2, it's already determined the fertility availability and it's setting the cob in the future already with that?
Well,
so you'd want to front load it, would you not?
You want to front load it a little bit, but just earlier in the show we had a question about when does the crop need its nitrogen, and I was just making the comment. I, in fact, just looked it up this morning again, and in one of our next magazines we're going to have the chart in there from Iowa State. But the crop only uses about 20% of its nitrogen between now, or for corn anyway, from now till V9. So that's pretty decent sized corn, and it's only going to use 20%. So a lot of the nitrogen gets used later in the year, but it certainly needs to be front loaded to some degree. You absolutely need nitrogen now. I don't disagree with that part at all, but all I'm worried about is if you put too much on more than that crop can use here in just the next few weeks, that you've got more risk of loss. And then in terms of what kind of loss you have, this is the other thing. When we talk stabilizers, there are different stabilizers out there. So in other words, if you're going to put it on, let's say shortly before a rain or before a snow, we did a lot of that this year, then I'm not worried about losing any to volatilization. Okay, but if you say, man, they're talking drought here, no rain for 2 weeks, I got to protect it from volatilization, you can get a cheap stabilizer to protect from volatilization. Now, the other side is leaching and denitrification. Leaching is if you get lots of rain and lighter soil especially, and denitrification is if you got heavy soil and it's just going to sit in water and then it'll turn to a gas and vapor out. So those are your three types of loss from and the reasons why you might want a nitrogen stabilizer. And then you just have to decide, well, where's my risk? And I mean, this whole thing is all about risk reward. I mean, it's just an extra expense if you don't need it. So that's why we talk all the time about, well, let's just go through this a little bit. If nitrogen's cheap and I have very little risk of loss, that stabilizer probably isn't going to pay, but you know, certainly could go the other way too.
Okay. All right.
So, yeah, lots of stuff I'm throwing out to you there, Dion. I don't have an exact answer for you, but I just wanted you to give you kind of what our thought process is through the whole thing, and then you got to ultimately make that judgment call.
No, it helps out a lot now. Good. Before I put anything down. So.
Yep.
Take care.
All right. Yep. Thanks.
All right. Let's catch up with Jeff in Kansas. Busy planting some corn out there today. Jeff, how you doing?
Doing great. I really appreciate being on with you today. And yeah, we're busy planting corn here.
All right. So how's planting season going in your part of Kansas?
Well, we are in southwest Kansas, and the last 2 weeks have been very clear and warm and dry. And so the whole countryside has been really, really busy planting corn.
Outstanding.
Conditions have been really, really good. We got good moisture underneath and seeds
tucking right into it. We got warm temps during the day, trending upwards, so we feel really good about our planting weather right now.
Okay, we're planting some sorghum this year. We're not historically sorghum growers. Give us your 1 minute to being sorghum greatness.
Well, I'll try my best here. Well, sorghum, you know, you it's a lot like corn. You plant about the same depth, maybe slightly shallower. You know, it's usually going to be planted a little bit later than corn. I think you need to see 60-degree temperatures in the soil. One thing that I really stress for guys that are growing it and are dealing with resistant weeds is you really got to give them what I call the 1-2 punch. Right before you plant, I try to hit the fields with a systemic herbicide of some kind. And then right after I plant, put down a pre-emerge with some sort of contact herbicide just to make sure everything's clean to start the season. I think your nitrogen to yield goal ratio is similar to corn. I tend to go about 1 to 1.1 pounds nitrogen per yield goal.
Yeah, I think the fertility side, we're pouncing on that thing. The weed control, I'm with you 100%. Jeff, we're up against a break. I want to talk to you just a little bit more, though. Can you hold on through the break? And we'll catch you right after that. Stay tuned. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio.
Hey, Adam. New drone?
Not just any drone. I mounted a laser on it to take out weeds.
Look out for that tree. And the power lines.
Oh, it's heading for the house.
There's a simpler way to protect spring wheat from weeds. Perfect Match Herbicide. The broadest spectrum weed and grass control in one product. Learn more at PerfectMatchHerbicide.com. Always read and follow label directions.
The laser.
Find your full potential and increase your bottom line with branded generic insecticides from Atticus LLC. Unwanted insects are a nuisance, but they're no match for Serpent from Atticus. Serpent delivers economical, fast-acting, broad-spectrum control to help your corn, soybeans, and wheat crops thrive. Growers across the region count on Atticus for relevant and reliable products that deliver results every time. Ask your local retailer about Atticus products and visit AtticusLLC.com to learn more. For value-based solutions you can trust, turn to Atticus. Always read and follow label instructions.
Success isn't just about maintaining your operation, how you make out for the season, or how much you can get from each acre. It's about doing precisely what needs to be done to feed your crop and grow your legacy, all the way down to the last drop. AgroLiquid Precision Crop Nutrition. Apply less, expect more. Find a retailer at agroliquid.com.
Introducing the Germinator Closing Wheel from Farm Shop MFG.
We interrupt this message for an important announcement. In these uncertain times, many farmers are looking to prolong their grain storage. That's why Farm Shop MFG is offering a $12.50 credit per germinator towards the purchase of a Grain Temp Guard Alarm DT, up to $200 per unit. Protect last year's crop and start 2020 off right. Go to farmshopmfg.com to order today.
When it comes to my weed control, I know a head start can go a long way. That's why I spray early, so I can keep control all season long with a Roundup Ready Extend crop system, the system that makes the difference. This is my field.
Choose the Roundup Ready Extend crop system for control of more weeds than any other soybean system. Featuring Extendamax herbicide with vapor grip technology to manage tough-to-control weeds, including up to 14 days of soil activity, along with the field-proven performance of Roundup Ready to Extend soybeans. Now you have the right tools to extend your weed control and extend your yield with the system that makes the difference. Learn how you can put the system to work in your field when you visit RoundupReadyExtend.com. Extendamax is a restricted-use pesticide. Performance may vary. Always read and follow grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions. Check local regulations for specific requirements in your state.
It's Farmer Friday on Ag PhD Radio. We're broadcasting from the Morton Studio today, taking your calls and questions at 844-44-AG-PHD. Just before the break, Jeff in Kansas has given us a little advice about raising sorghum up here in South Dakota, and We haven't got it put in yet, Jeff. We're waiting for a little warmer weather here too, and wrapping up corn and soybeans first.
Yeah, that's good. Need to wait just a little while to get it in the ground.
Now, when you're doing that on your farm, I guess, what is your timing? Is planting corn versus planting sorghum, do you take a little time off in between, or you just roll right into it?
No, we wait a little while. We tend to target if it's irrigated sorghum, we're looking at mid-May to the end of May. If we're looking dry lands, we kind of go into June, you know, June 5th to the end of June. It just seems like if you plant the dry land earlier than June in that May time frame, you just catch too much heat. If I plant it later in June, you're able to start cooling off in September, allow that plant to fill out the grain, and it just seems like it works a little better for us that way. And we're in our area, we plant a lot of our dry land sorghum into wheat stubble, which is a really good place to put it, insulated with lots of moisture underneath. That system works really well for us.
All right, great tips there. Now, speaking about sorghum, we hear a lot about what's happening at the corn market. We're even hearing quite a bit about what's going on with the livestock market. How about with the sorghum market right now?
Sorghum, the basis has really caught fire here recently. Back in February, we started exporting quite a bit of sorghum to China, and what I understand, for a two-month period, we've exported like 1.2 million metric tons, which equates to about half the production of Texas, half the sorghum production of Texas. So, you know, sorghum is priced off corn, but there's a lot of times basis will go above corn just due to some of these other markets demanding it. Typically, you know, just in a year that you don't have much export demand, you're run about 90% the value of corn. But this year, I think it's a really good option just because it doesn't take as much money to plant and grow. And so, in a way, it is a good hedge against low prices just because you got lower cost of production and you still got some pretty good upside yield potential.
Awesome. I love positive things going on out there. This is one of the few right now, so that's awesome.
Yeah.
Talking with Jeff down in Kansas a little about sorghum and other things. Jeff, thank you so much. Really appreciate having you on. Hope you and your family are well and stay safe this spring.
I appreciate it. Thank you very much. You too.
You bet. Let's head over to Indiana. We've got Randy with us right now. Randy, how's it going?
Hey, it's going real well. Nice and sunny, and soil's in good condition, and we're planting corn and beans both.
So, Randy, it sounds like you got a question on this recommendation you've got from an agronomist about adding some lime plus some gypsum. And what our screeners told us is you had a pH of 7.5 to 7.9, 63% calcium, 26% magnesium. Does that sound right?
Yes.
All right. And so you're probably questioning, why would an agronomist recommend 2 tons of high calcium lime plus 2 tons of gypsum, correct?
When you have a pH in the sevens. That was my question.
I agree 100%. I would also question that. And I really hate to contradict what agronomists say out there because I probably don't know the whole story. But, yeah, if it's my farm and I have 63% calcium and 26% magnesium with a 7.5 to a 7.9 pH, all I'm going to add is gypsum.
Well, it may have been cost consideration because the gypsum has really gotten high price now since power plants are all closing down.
And there you go. And so what you can also do, you can accomplish the same thing by putting lime out and elemental sulfur. So it all depends on the cost situation. Some guys will just do gypsum. Other guys will go lime plus elemental sulfur because we want to ultimately drive that pH down a little bit. But the other thing is, I'd be real curious to see your entire soil tests, because I'd kind of look at this way. I'm gonna assume you don't have unlimited funds to just do whatever you want on the ground for fun. I'm going to assume you would like to make money and hopefully stay within a budget. And my point here is that the best way to spend your dollars, or do you need more phosphorus, potassium, sulfur, manganese, copper, boron, iron? You see where I'm going. So I don't know how the whole thing shakes out, and that's why, again, I hate to contradict somebody's recommendations without knowing the entire story. But yeah, I would question that a lot as well.
Okay, well, that answers my question.
I'll say this. If you want to send us your soil tests, we'd be more than happy to take a look at them. And, you know, maybe what you're doing there is going to all end up working out just fine. But my concern would be that you're not getting enough sulfur in there to start driving that pH down. And, you know, ultimately, I always ask myself, why is my pH out of whack? Because we know that a 7.5, 7.9 pH, that is not ideal for yield. So there's something going on out there. And I want to try to figure out what it is. Is it drainage? Is it we are just lacking in certain nutrients? And maybe it's the magnesium deal. You got 26% magnesium. That does drive pH up a little bit more. Maybe that is it. So, I'd like to see your soil tests. If you want to send them to us, just send them here at radio@agphd.com.
Okay. How about high rates of manure application? Will that lift your pH? Dairy manure?
Well, it depends on how much sodium that there is there. Sodium will raise pH, but a lot of times what we find is there's quite a bit of nitrogen in that dairy manure and potassium, and that potentially can push the pH down. So I'm just trying to say it kind of could go either way. If you've got good drainage, then I would hope that manure is going to eventually balance your fertility a little bit, as long as you're not overdoing it, and hopefully drop that pH a little. So I don't think I'd be super worried unless I was trying to put on big time rates.
Well, it is pretty heavy application rates.
But, how heavy?
20,000 gallons.
Yep. Oh, we've got a dairy we get a whole bunch of manure from, and I don't know what your nutrient level is, but at 20,000 gallons, then we at least have run into salt problems. And so that's, again, where I'd like to see those soil tests. Maybe it's sodium out there. Maybe you do need to either back off the manure or, you know, completely leave it out of the equation for a year or two to help things get back in line.
Okay. Well, it's outdoor lagoon, so it's yep. only about 3-4% solids in the
yep.
manure, and so the amount of nutrients you're getting is not very high, but
sure.
it could be the sodium, like you said.
Yeah, yep, I don't know. Sodium and salt can cause problems out there, but yeah, if you want to send us your soil tests, it'd be great. We'd be more than happy to take a look at them. Hey, Randy, we got to run, but thanks a lot for the call. Really appreciate it.
All right, thank you.
You bet, thanks.
Let's head over to Wisconsin. We got Joe with us right now. Joe, how are you doing today?
I'm doing very well today. Thank you.
Must be planting corn then. Everybody gets all excited when you're planting corn. Everything's going good.
Yes, it is. As far as the planting's going very well. I'm about done here. Finish up today here in my home county, but I farm a couple counties away, and it's raining in Rock County, so nothing's getting accomplished over there, but.
You know, what a difference from 2019, because we could actually use a little bit of rain on the farm right now. How about you?
Exactly, yes. We're short here in southwest Wisconsin. Every rain that's been forecasted has dried up or went around us. So, yeah, we could use a good inch of rain.
How soon do you start on soybeans then? Do they go in immediately as soon as you're done with the corn?
My soybeans will be done tomorrow.
Excellent. Excellent.
Started
yeah.
soybeans 2 weeks ago today.
Okay. Yeah, we've kind of done the same thing this year. We planted some corn, then we got into some soybeans, and then we're finishing up on some corn here over the next couple of days as well. Hey, Joe, we're up against the end of the show here, so we got to run, but stay safe and healthy, and good luck here the rest of the spring.
You bet. Thank you.
I love Farmer Fridays. Get to talk to people all over, and we got a ton of questions that we didn't get to today, so we're going to have to get to those early part of next week here. But stay safe on your farm and healthy as you roll through planting season. We're sure thinking about everybody out there. Thanks for listening to our show today. Be sure to join us each weekday for more Ag PhD Radio. And now stay tuned for Rob Sharkey and Shark Farmer Radio.